tend to come out longer. But generally they'll be quite short because we always have to be practical. Now, I'm going to read this one over here and we'll analyze it. The students will be able to give the English equivalent of a particular Sanskrit word from the Srimad Bhagavatam verse and explain its meaning using the terms the teacher used in the class. At least 3/4 of the students will be able to do this without mistake when called upon at the end of the class. This was your comment?
Something else that is writing about teaching.
Okay. Did everyone hear that? The students will be able to give the English equivalent of a particular Sanskrit word from the Srimad Bhagavatam verse and explain its meaning using terms the teacher used in the class. At least 3/4 of the students will be able to do this without mistake when called upon at the end of the class. Okay, let's talk about this objective. What are the 3 elements of an objective? What's the most important one? What's the first most and most important one? Raise your hands. Okay, what's your name, Prabhu? Radhadama, that's right. What is the first one? Okay, what do we usually call it though? Procedure means something else. Do you remember? Almost. Yeah. Performance. What you want the students to be able to do at the end. Performance. Now what's the performance being requested here? The students will be able to give the English equivalent of a particular Sanskrit word from the Srimad Bhagavatam verse and explain its meaning using terms the teacher used in the class. What is the performance? Oh yeah, at least 3/4 of the students will be able to do this without mistake when called upon at the end of the class. What's the performance that's being requested? Yeah.
Defining the Sanskrit word.
In English. So in other words, the teacher is going to explain a Bhagavatam verse and the student has to give the English equivalent. Now it's not exactly clear the way I'm reading it.
In
other words, he can pick any Sanskrit word, or who picks the Sanskrit word? But who picks it, the student or the teacher?
The teacher.
Okay, so so any one word?
No, it'll be one that the teacher specifically felt was significant, and he kind of.
Okay, so the teacher is referring to one particular word and defining that word in English. And the objective of this lesson is that when called upon, the students, this is the performance, the students will be able to to say the Sanskrit in English, explain its meaning using terms the teacher has used in the class. So is that performance clearly defined what the teacher wants the students to do? Raise a hand if you think so. Okay, that's about half the class thinks so. Probably half the class is undecided. And does anyone think this is definitely not a clear performance? Okay, what would you think is, what's the difficulty?
Well, I see there in a condition when the students are called upon to explain the verse of the condition.
Yeah, but the performance is clear.
The performance is clear.
It's pretty clear. I just would have gone through this. It's the one lesson. For one lesson, I would have chosen, stay
Okay, so that if you were actually writing this for a particular lesson, you would state the Sanskrit verse and the particular word that you're going to emphasize, and you might even list a few of the terms, right? Okay, now the conditions. What does conditions mean? That's the second one.
What does conditions mean?
Now keep in mind that out of conditions and criteria, the most important one out of these three is the performance. What you want them to do, what you want the students to have learned after having been taught your lesson, what you want them to have learned. This is the most important, and this just makes it a little easier for you to, the teacher, to understand whether they have learned it or not. So what does conditions mean?
What circumstances, when, or, you know, what, I don't want to say conditions, what circumstances the student will have to perform.
Right, exactly. Under what circumstances or conditions the student will have to perform. So, in this one, what's implied, can they look at their notes, for instance? You've given the lecture, and you may allow them to look at their notes, or you may not allow them to look at your notes. That would be a condition, and at this point, you don't have that condition down.
Generally,
what do you have in mind?
I was thinking of normal Bhagavatam class. Some people may take notes, but most devotees normally don't take notes on this. Thinking that the teacher would have explained it well enough and made the point enough that students would be able to just from memory.
Okay, so you want it from memory. Okay, so you so an example of a condition that's not written here, that could be written here, is that the student would not be allowed to look at the notes, but you are doing it more casually. You would naturally not look at his notes. And then for criteria for success or failure, you put it straight on the teacher. At least 3/4 of the students will be able to do this without mistake when called upon at the end of the class. Now, usually when we're talking about criteria, we're talking about for the students, whether they'll have done the performance properly, not 3/4 of them. It's for one particular student, say. And a good example of a criteria would be if the teacher used 4 different terms or 6 different terms, the students would have to mention in their explanation at least 3 of those terms to be considered a passing. Okay, that's criteria. The criteria for success or failure, what's going to be the difference between success or failure? For instance, if I'm saying, what are the 3 elements of an explicit instructional objective? You'd have to know all 3 of these without looking at your notes, without looking at the board, to all 3 of them. Not 2 out of 3, but 3 out of 3. The 2 out of 3, or the 3 out of 3, or 1 out of 3, that would be criteria that marks the difference between success or failure. Okay, let's pick another one. This is a short one from Kartik Dasi. Students should walk quietly, single line to the temple without talking in 5 minutes. This appears to be a Gurukula one. Who's Kartik? Hare Krishna. Okay. What is the performance? I'll read it again. Students should walk quietly, single line to the temple without talking in 5 minutes. What is the performance? Hirtagora. Okay, they should walk quietly to the temple. Pretty simple, yeah?
Wouldn't you quietly give permission?
Yes, they're walking to the temple, but quietly. But it seemed to be emphasized so much. If they were.
It's still being technically a commission.
They don't have This is where objectives and writing objectives become no fun and hair splitting. This can happen very typically. So if it was a condition, it would be, I would say, what is it in a single line and quietly. I guess they're both conditions. But this is so essential. I would say a condition would be more something that's not included here, with a teacher being there or without a teacher being there. That's really an essential condition that doesn't have very much to do with the performance.
So when listening, let's say you ask if you ask to list which was which, let's say on the phrase or something like this, then the essential points for the performance should be listed with performance.
With performance. What you exactly want them to do. And the conditions under which they're going to perform it, with the teacher, without the teacher, in 5 minutes. Or I guess the quiet, you could also say quietly. What is quietly? Now, quietly is very difficult to define. See, now, we can talk about it in a very typical, in a very, very hair-splitting way, but usually we don't want to do that, actually, because we're interested in it in a practical way. Because quietly, does that mean that the children are whispering to each other? Does that mean they're not allowed to speak at all? If one child makes one sound, is it still quietly? So these are the kind of things that people who write educational objectives and instructional objectives, they drive each other crazy about. We're not interested in that. We're just interested in the general concept, because thinking in this way will help us very much organize our lecturing and our teaching. Good one, simple. Here's one by Kamal, Bhakta Kamal. He's divided into three: performance, condition, and criteria. At the end of this lesson, that's a good way to start, the students will be able to recite the first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam in Sanskrit. And how many of you can recite the first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam in Sanskrit? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And state the English equivalent of the Sanskrit terms. Of the Sanskrit terms, I guess that now he's listing 1, 2, 3, 4 Sanskrit terms. Janmadyasya yataha, abhigya srarat, and satyam param. So they have to recite the whole verse and recite the English equivalent of these four terms, right? Conditions. This should be done from memory. Criteria. No mistakes should be made. So just see if this is exactly what you want to teach. Say if you had something vague or implicit. I want my students to know the first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur lectured on that verse for 3 months. There's unlimited subject matter in that verse. So you know the verse. Know the Bhagavatam first verse of the first canto. But soon as you make your instructional objective explicit like this, you know just what you want them to be able to do as a result of your class. And therefore, you'll naturally teach. Now, how would you organize this lesson? There's basically just, you'd have to get them to memorize the Sanskrit. So you drill them on the Sanskrit. Right, or you'd have them work in pairs on the Sanskrit or in small groups, and you might have it written on the board. And then you'd have certain four different phrases underlined, and you just lecture on these four. And then it will be clear to you. If you know the objective of your lesson, it becomes clear, or it points the way on how you should teach. As soon as you know exactly what you want to accomplish, then you can start deciding in a very clear way exactly how you're going to accomplish that. This is an extremely good example of how it will point the way to the teaching. and the fact that it should be done from memory. So that means you're going to have them at some point, you'll erase the board in the lesson, right? You'll have to erase the board and have them not look at it in on the board if you're going to teach them how to do it from memory. So for all of them are quite good. So there's more or less two points that we're really trying to push here. One is how to write an explicitly stated instructional objective. And the key of that is thinking of what the student, you want the student to be able to do, not know or not appreciate, but actually be able to do after having heard your lesson. That's the key, thinking in those terms. And notice, that's the first point. The second point is notice how it will naturally point to how you're going to teach the lesson. So that's the key again. The first thing is the teacher has to know what he wants the students to be able to do, and then automatically he'll get an idea. 80% of his work or 50% of the work is done already once he has a clear idea of what he wants them to be able to do. And then that gives so many indications of how to teach. That's the second point. And the third point, that just see how easy it is to evaluate your teaching. If your teaching goal is stated as an explicit instructional objective, it's so easy to see whether the students have learned what you wanted to teach them.
Objectives tend to be rote activities. What about something if you want them to be able to discuss? How would you write an objective that would point to the fact that you want them to be able to confidently discuss a philosophical point?
Okay, what do you mean by confidently discuss?
Well, maybe
no, talk in explicit terms. What does it mean?
Studying Daniel Smith, the first.
Okay.
And want them to be able to, I guess, maybe explain analogies.
There you go. Now you're talking about explicit instructional objectives. And if you want them to explain analogies, then you'll have to teach the analogies and you'll be able to evaluate. And if you want them to know the Sanskrit word by words, or you're talking about discussing, in the discussion they should be able to refer to two analogies, two Sanskrit words. And then, because you were talking about competently discuss, as soon as you use a vague term, an implicit term, like competently discuss, then it immediately causes confusion. Because then you have to say, well, you didn't competently discuss. Well, I did so. You did not.
I did so.
But as soon as you say, well, you didn't use four examples, three Sanskrit words. Well, good point. Okay, right in, by the end of, this is from Bhaktin Heidi. By the end of the lesson, the students will be able to recite verses 1 through 4 of chapter 16 of Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, I presume, from memory. The Sanskrit and English translations with no error. Okay, and the performance, being able to recite the four verses, both Sanskrit and English, from memory with no error. Just simply memory, never mind any understanding. The understanding may come in the second lesson. Conditions, no book to recite from. Also, obviously, no, if it's from memory, no on the board. Also, they're not allowed to write it on the inside of their eyelid and then close their eyes and peek and see the translations. No, and criteria, no error in word by word. Oh, now it's word by word recitation. Okay, that's right. Test each student at the end of the lesson, oral recitation. It could be also, in other words, another way that the criteria could be in writing. They might have to write it, and if you were teaching them to write it, then the teaching may be different than to recite it by memory. So again, the same point. And Prabhupada used to say this, And there's a common English expression like this. When a man knows what he wants, the whole world moves aside. So when we know what we want to do in teaching, exactly what we want to do, accomplish, what we want the students to learn, it makes it so much easier to be successful. Rupa Raghunath Das, performance. The students should learn the importance of reading Srimad Bhagavatam systematically and explain why. Okay. Example, the first canto is representing the feet of the Lord and the tenth canto is the face of the Lord. Okay, they should learn the importance of reading Srimad Bhagavatam systematically and explain why. Where's Rupa Raghunath? Okay. No, you want them to learn something.
Yeah.
What? Okay. Now, how do you see if someone has learned something or not? You can see if someone can or hear if someone can speak the verse or write it down, but how do you see if someone has learned it or not?
Well, that's just the third part.
That's the third part. Okay, you've made your own system. Okay. Conditions. A student are asked to use as a reference the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Criteria. In one paragraph, they should write and explain why we should read Srimad Bhagavatam starting from first canto on. They should quote some statements that Prabhupada made in various purports of the first canto. Okay, I'm going to read this again and let's analyze it. The students should learn the importance of reading Srimad Bhagavatam systematically and explain why. Now, someone, I think it was Kamal, he wrote, at the end of this lesson, the students will be able to. Now, if you start like that, it makes it a lot easier. At the end of this lesson, the students will be able to write and explain, so it's actually the criteria more, which is the performance. Why write and explain in one paragraph why we should read Bhagavatam starting from the first canto. And he should quote some statements that Prabhupada made in various purports of the first canto. Okay, any comments about this one? About the performance, the conditions, the criteria? I didn't read it so clearly, unfortunately.
Well, if you're dealing with something like the importance of something, that is a little bit on the implicit side. But if it's clarified by saying, as defined by Srila Prabhupada in his first canto reports, then it becomes where you actually have to get that directed from Srila Prabhupada. You actually, in terms of Prabhupada's idea of what is important.
Right, that helps, control. But it doesn't solve the problem, I think.
Well, it seems to be clearly an example of a educational.
Yeah.
It's broad.
It's real broad. And also it's definitely, at least tending towards implicit. He should learn the Bhagavatam. Well, when someone has learned the Bhagavatam, how can you see that they have learned it? What should they be able to do once they've learned it? Right, that the performance is something you're actually able to do, to demonstrate what you have learned. You follow?
I follow. Probably didn't understand the guy's
advice.
Yeah. People should learn the importance.
Right, but that's implicit. Yes, I've learned it. I know it. I've learned it. That's implicit. That's the definition of implicit. It can't be seen. It's inside. I've learned it. But when that implicit is taken outside, it's demonstrated. How do you demonstrate that you've learned it or you know it? Then it becomes explicit. So you've put that in the criteria. They should write a paragraph explaining. So after hearing a lecture which explains 10 different points why we should study the Bhagavatam from the first canto to the 10th canto, he should be able to write one paragraph, and this paragraph should include at least 5 of those points. Okay? Something like that. That makes it more explicit. It concentrates on performance. What the person will actually have to do to demonstrate that he has learned or he knows. Okay. Any more questions or comments on objectives? Now, we're going to be using these throughout the course and throughout the and especially throughout this week, and therefore the what you aren't clear about hopefully will become more clear.
How to use this kind of techniques, this kind of scheme in a Srimad Bhagavatam class, that all of a sudden they're asking you in Srimad Bhagavatam class, you're coming from nowhere and right from.
I'm not following. Wait, start again in the question.
How to use
this in giving a Bhagavatam class?
In a Bhagavatam class, in which you sometimes are called to give a Bhagavatam class. It's not that you are in a course, you are dividing your matter in steps, and then you want to hide.
You mean like 2 minutes before the Bhagavatam class is supposed to start?
Prabhu,
give class today.
Anyway, it happens also 2 minutes before.
When 2 minutes before someone asks me to give class, I just refuse. It makes all, generally speaking, because one should prepare. If you want people to learn, you have to prepare. So this isn't an outlandish way to even look at a Bhagavatam class, although it has to be adjusted to some degree. But if you think in terms of what you actually want the students, the devotees who have heard the class, to actually come away with. It helps so much. It will stop us from covering too much. It'll force us to read and find out what point Prabhupada is really emphasizing and what Krishna or Sukadeva Goswami is emphasizing or Maitreya Muni is emphasizing, and try to present that point in such a way that the students learn something. I'm not sure I understood your question properly.
So maybe like I'm reading the text, I'm trying to understand what Vyasadeva, what Sukadeva Goswami, what Srila Prabhupada, what is their main point, what they want to transmit, and then I'm trying to focus it, and then I'm trying to transmit in the class. Maybe like this?
Maybe like that, yeah. Through your own realizations and backup points and stories, you want. That's systematically going through the Bhagavatam. To deeply realize that ourselves and then explain it. Any other questions? Arjun?
Again, putting this in not necessarily Bhagavatam, but in kind of preaching using it as a preacher. Is there any kind of a problem in maybe becoming also attached to the results,
like,
I want three people to shape up after this lecture.
That's a whole different question at this point, whether it's whether that's a proper way to preach. Is that what your question is?
Well, that was a bit of a wild example. But in other words, your criteria—you can become possible, like as a preacher, you become a little too criteria-oriented and not kind of enough detached from the reaction of the person you're preaching to.
If you're giving a presentation like a Bhagavatam class, you don't have very much time to get the reactions because it's a lecture. For instance, or you're asked to make a presentation to a school. In many temples, different schools come and visit the temple. Or you might have to go to a what type of presentations are you often asked to make, Maharaj?
Groups, schools, sometimes it has to be somewhere you're going to talk for 10 minutes and get 30 seconds on a television program or radio, so people are calling, like interview, or recording maybe. or a presentation at a conference where it's very specific?
You have to decide in advance what you want them to learn after having heard your presentation.
I'm the question of his question. He's speaking about results oriented.
Yeah.
And you're speaking about something besides results. You're speaking about you'd like them to learn a certain something. So say in preaching, whether it's a lecture or as Maharaj is describing, if you want them to learn a certain, you want to communicate a certain message to them and have them indicate that they've gotten the message, doesn't mean necessarily going to like the message or, you know, surrender to Krishna because they learned the message. They may present the message and respond some other way. But at least
you've done your part.
You've done your part. Their resentment or their freaking out or whatever the thing may be, or arguing back, may be a good indication that you got your message across.
A good example of that when Prabhupada's the original Bhagavad Gita was sent around when it was going to be published by Macmillan. It was sent around to many of the literary people of the day, and they sent one to Allen Ginsberg, and they sent one to Denise Levitov and Thomas Merton, and they also sent one to Alan Watts. And Alan Watts replied, that he was very angry. And he wrote back that Prabhupada saying that the Bhagavad Gita cannot be interpreted is his own interpretation. And when Prabhupada heard that, he was very happy. And he said, it is good that the demons are getting angry. But the point is that regardless of the reaction, sometimes you may want a particular result, but another time, as Maharaj is saying, you want to present a certain amount of information and you want the students to have learned that. Very simple. It's not always to do something doesn't always mean just a result as gross as shaving up, and it may be able to recite the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra by heart after. You might be doing that with a group of children. Yes.
My idea in giving a lecture or teaching, one should first choose the subject. A subject means he knows that subject. Then the second is to gain the confidence of his audience. And the third is to project his ideas to the audience. So it is said, to be great is to be simple. You must be simple as a teacher so that each audience can understand you clearly. You should use simple words so that at whatever level the students are, they can understand.
You have to know your students. That actually comes up, those good points come up when we discuss lecturing as a point. So to get the confidence, one of the most important ways of getting the confidence of the audience is to have confidence. And one of the most important ways to have confidence is to know what you're trying to accomplish when you're doing something and be prepared.
Yeah. I'm a little confused. You're struck emphasis and explicit in that our final goal, this whole process, seems to be interesting to love Krishna. A lot of what we want to teach and learn is internal. The basic thing is that this is an internal process, not something that has to be demonstrated. And also many classes, like Chris Tetsubar's class, I analyzed it, and although maybe he has some extra control, certainly, but I think what he really wants to get out of it is some deepening of character. I mean, that can be demonstrated, but the root point is not to demonstrate it, but really, it seems that's more important than the...
To what?
It seems that the internal, in most of our life, is really more important than...
But the internal, and I've also discussed with Satsukhara on this course, his purpose is to have the students be able to learn to study Srimad Bhagavatam in groups and relish it amongst themselves, so that they can take that with them. And that may be his explicit instructional objective or explicit educational objective. But also, there will always be external symptoms generally of Krishna consciousness.
Always.
You can't hide them even. But anyway, that's a very deep subject. Interesting point. Now, it is definitely possible, as maybe Prasanatma is hinting at, to overdo the external, explicit, instructional objectives side of things. Because some things in Krishna consciousness can't be packaged in a very simple, nice-sounding, scientific-sounding, explicit instructional objective, such as we do actually want people to appreciate the Srimad Bhagavatam, simply appreciate it or relish chanting the holy names of the Lord. We want that to happen, or to be inspired to preach the Lord's holy name all over the world. We want that to happen. And these are very internal things. So, yet we are still confronted with trying to teach something. And looking at the teaching's purpose or the teacher's job in this way, it helps. Although it is definitely not everything. Another problem that can occur, is that a teacher decides this is my objective in this lesson, and I'm going to accomplish it. And then a student asks such a deep question, an excellent deep question that's glorious, and the teacher is very inspired to answer it, but then because it interferes with his accomplishing his explicit instructional objective, he neglects it. So that's also not good. Therefore, when one plans a series of lectures, one generally plans, say if he has 20 lectures, he'll plan enough material for 15 and allow the inspiration to fill up the other five. But also we should know that, just like there was one example when Prabhupada was asked by Gauga Muni way back at 22nd Avenue, whether he didn't feel like bowing down. It was external. You know this story? Should he bow down to his spiritual master even though he didn't feel like it? And Prabhupada's answer was, from the external, the internal will come. So we shouldn't minimize the external. The whole system of Vaidhi Bhakti practically is an external system. And from the potent external practices, the internal bhav will come, the mood will actually come. And then, when the mood is there, it will still manifest. Just like if we look at the symptoms of bhava bhakti mentioned in the Nectar Devotion, they're external symptoms. So it is not that by doing the external symptoms that automatically have bhava bhakti. But yet, if you do have bhava bhakti, you'll naturally exhibit that through the external symptoms. So it's a bit of a complicated question. But it's very helpful to think in this way, and therefore I'm not at all emphasizing criteria condition to make it all perfectly scientific sounding. But it's very helpful to think in this way, to know what you're trying to accomplish, what you want the students to be able to do when you go in, to think in those terms. And when you're dealing with an expert teacher, you may not notice that he's doing this, but actually he will be doing it. Okay. What I'd like to do now is have some of the students who had prepared 2-minute teaching presentations to teach us. Now, who is the first brave soul? Oh, you moved. That was, yes, he moved. Okay. Who are the devotees? We'll start this way. We'll narrow it down. Who are the devotees who were asked to do this? I remember you were one. Okay, raise your hands really high. Commit yourselves. Okay. No, Janardhan wouldn't do that. Okay, any volunteers to go first? Huh? And let me guess, you left them in England. You'll be right back. Where are they? Okay, go get them. Okay. But meanwhile, we'll try someone else. You ready? Okay. Now, what we're going to do is ask all the students to do basically two things for each presentation. We're not going to have really any discussion during the presentations or explain the merits and the demerits of every presentation. What we will do, though, is at the end, we're going to ask the presenter who has taught us something what his explicit instructional objective is. And then he can get, and then we'll call for a show of hands to see if the students succeeded in this, who felt that he achieved this for them individually, and that will give him an idea of how successful he's been. And secondly, what I would like you to do, everyone to do, during these presentations and also during my teaching and also during, as we had mentioned yesterday, during the other teaching that you're watching and experiencing and during your day, write down what you're learning about teaching, things to do, things not to do, and then we'll discuss a few of those later. Okay? Wait. Oh yeah, there's one other thing. One other thing that I'm going to be timing over here, and I'll raise my hand at 1 minute and 30 seconds, and that means that you have 30 seconds left, okay? And then at 2 minutes, I'm going to say stop. And even mid-sentence, yep, stop, okay?
And so then one question, and if it doesn't last for 2 minutes?
Well, then we'll stop earlier, okay?
So, what I'd like to explain is one of the bases of our Krishna conscious preaching is this mood of compassion. Without compassion, how can we preach? So this compassion comes in two words, basically. There's kripa, and there's moya. Now, ultimately, both mean compassion, and both are very necessary. But they're exhibited in different ways. Whereas moya is an internal feeling of compassion. It's that feeling that, say, Srila Prabhupada had for everyone. He always felt compassion for every single person, just like Vrajanguru who gave the example when Prabhupada saw the people playing golf. He was in tears that somebody would waste so much time. It was simply his compassionate mood. But the other side of that was that Srila Prabhupada would give his compassionate mood, and with his compassion, he would exhibit his compassion in the form of kripa, where he would actually give his mercy, that compassion that he had, he would give that to anyone and everyone who was willing to listen. So kripa is the mood of compassion that is actually directed towards an individual, that he approaches and gives that mercy. Just like, of course, one good example is my own name is Krishna Kripa. If it wasn't for Krishna's mercy upon me, there's no way I could still be here. So this is a direct interaction with Krishna, and he's being merciful, and coming through the Guru, like that. Whereas this moya is that feeling that you have compassion. You actually have it in kripa to give that compassion. So are there any questions?
Yes. Okay, will that... Huh? That's all right, he has a question, but... We're not going to go very much into people more. Thank you. But why don't you tell what your objective was?
So the objective was to know the difference between Kripa and Moya, and that they're both, ultimately, is a strict definition of compassion. This was a different the application.
Okay. How many feel now that they know the difference between Kripa and Moya? No. Okay. How many don't feel they know the difference between Kripa and Moya now? Okay, this will, how many people aren't sure they know the difference? Okay. Okay, take a minute and write down anything that you learned about teaching from that. Okay, who is the second one? Everyone seems to be pointing at Ananda for some unknown reason. Were you supposed to go?
Well, I was supposed to speak, yes.
Oh, well, would you like to speak? I'll be here, I'll notify you.
I'd like to talk about bathing in the Yamuna. One time, Srimati Radharani was waiting for Lord Krishna, and she was getting impatient, and Lord Krishna wasn't coming. So she heard from some messenger that Krishna was with Viraj. So Srimati Radharani went to got Viraj, and Srimati Radharani cursed Viraj to become Yamuna. So Yamuna, only a few hundred feet away, is the step, or is there, for the devotees to bathe in. And by bathing in the Yamuna, who is actually Vishakha Devi, one can actually not only become purified with sinful activities, but actually can develop love for Radha and Krishna. So Prabhupada said in the Srimad Bhagavatam that he established this temple, this Vrindavan temple here. So one of the reasons was the devotees to bathe in the Yamuna River. So I'm encouraging everybody to go for a bath in the Yamuna, and so we can all experience the wonderful Dham by entering further into Krishna consciousness.
Okay, another 1 minute and 30 second presentation. Okay, what was your objective?
To encourage everybody to go and bath in the river.
Okay. How many felt encouraged to go bathe in the river Yamuna? How many of you felt encouraged even before the presentation?
No, but still.
Is it? Now, in the presentation, one question, which point? Oh, do you have any questions for anyone about it? Okay. Now, which point that he made encouraged you most to bathe in the Yamuna? Okay, raise your hand so I can see who's... Okay. What's your name again? I'm sorry.
Just that Prabhupada recommended that there was a strong point to me. Although I was intrigued with the first description of the word, I didn't.
Okay. What was your... Arjun?
That not only do you free of sins, but you develop your love for Radha and Krishna.
Okay. So it sounds like many people were encouraged by many of the different points. Okay. Subhash, where are you? You ready? You have all your materials?
I can only breathe.
Yeah, okay, breathe. One, two, three, breathe. Okay, we'll give you the next one then. Who else? Who is next? Yaru? Come. Oh, you want to do it from back there?
I prefer to do it from there.
Okay, come.
This is about determination. It is very important. It's a kind of determination. To begin a project and to go through that project to successful completion. And this is the example I want to give. That in 1985 or so, the treasure hunters next to the shore of Florida, they found a big boat full of gold, evaluated by or on $400 million. And when they put out the treasure in one of the bars of gold, they found many hooks for the fishermen. These fishermen have been many times sitting on the water above the treasure, fishing. And when the hook gets stuck, they pull it a little bit, they couldn't get it out, they caught it there. So because they didn't go deep, they didn't investigate what is holding my hook, they miss this treasure. So my idea here with any project is that we have to go to the bottom. Go all the way down. Go all the way to the end of the course. And then you can get some benefit for yourself and to share with others. Thank you very much.
Okay, what was your objective?
That determination is very important to go to the end of the course.
Okay, you wanted everyone to go. Today is the final day of drop day. So I explicitly stated you wanted to tell people that.
Yes, don't look in.
Look from the course. Okay. How many of you became determined? Felt your determination increase by this presentation in general? Okay. Thank you. Never underestimate the power of a story. Okay, see what. This will be the last one we have time for today. Come on.
Does the 2 minutes include prayer, etc.?
Yes.
It does.
Yes, including prayer time. Okay, we'll give you 2 minutes and 10 seconds.
Right.
He's smart, I can tell that.
Remind me when it's...
Okay.
15 seconds to go.
Okay.
Please. Thank you. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutle Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deva Gauravani Pachayane Nirvishesa Sunivadi Pashtaristani. Today's lesson, I just want to try and achieve, if you will bear with me, is to know your neighbor's names, who is sitting next to you, and give them some Mahaprasad. Because Mahaprasad is Krishna himself, right? A representation. It's not different from Krishna. So that is the exercise. The object is to know your neighbor's names. So hopefully, by the end of this 2 minute lesson, you will know who your neighbors are. Association of devotees is very important. Right. I'll pass some Mahaprasad this side. And I'll give you 30 seconds to discuss with your neighbors what their name is. And then I'll ask some questions in five seconds.
Okay, time is running out, and we're going to begin to collect the Mahaprasada very soon. So you better discuss with your neighbors.
Right. Find out what your neighbor's name is.
Hey, how do you name it?
we haven't got much time, so please ask your neighbors. Time is running out, please. Right, are you ready, gentlemen? Matajis and Prabhus?
Okay.
Hare Krishna?
15 seconds
can you please ask, tell us who your neighbors are?
This is Holly.
I just want to know the names, where they are from.
She's from
Vermont. Right. Fine, thank you.
Sarah Hall.
And your neighbor, your next door neighbor, on this side?
Forgive me.
Either side. Neighbors on either side. Can I have an answer from Rupa Raghunath? Maharaj, Mukunda Maharaj. Right. I think time is running out.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
Wait, Prabhu,
what was your objective?
Everyone must know everyone's name.
No, okay, everyone must know everyone's name. Okay.
It's the neighbors.
Okay, we won't catch you on a technicality on that one. Okay.
You are born.
Huh?
You are born as an Indian, you open a shop.
Okay, now at this time, we will start discussing onward past objectives, to procedures. But still, there is one code I'd like to read on page 13. It really puts the importance of having objectives in perspective, where Prabhupada says, to our Brahmatirtha, known here as Bob, Prabhupada says, can you answer what is liberation? You are a professor, a teacher, but if I ask you, can you explain what is liberation? And Bob says, not adequately. I can't explain adequately. Because if I could explain, then I would be coming liberated very fast. Prabhupada. But if you do not know what is liberation, then how fast and slow liberation? There is no question of liberation. It is neither fast nor slow. You first know where the train is going, and then what is the use of asking or understanding fast or slow? You do not know your destination. So there, in that one very sweet quote, it sums up the importance of knowing your goal or your destination. Imagine in the train station, going to the New Delhi station and thinking, let me get on this train because it's a super express train. How foolish. It may be going in the opposite direction that you want to go in, but just because it's going fast? How silly. First, the objective has to be assigned. And we've tried to demonstrate something about how to assign or use explicit instructional objectives. Now, once the objective is assigned, once the goal is assigned, you want to get here, you want to have the students do this, and you know you're starting over here, then you have to proceed step by step by step. Now, how to proceed to accomplish the goal? Your explicit instructional objective. How to proceed? Now, the first point was one that we made in the beginning and we made yesterday. That once you know exactly what you are trying to accomplish, that points very much towards how to accomplish it. if you want everyone to know their neighbor's names, one to the left and one to the right, the clearer actually you know exactly what you want to accomplish. If, even if you state it as you want everyone to know the names, it's more difficult. But if you say, I want everyone to know who is sitting to the left of them, and everyone to know who is sitting to the right of them as the objective, the clearer it is like that, then that points directly towards the methods you're going to use, the procedures you're going to use. Because what do you do, obviously, if you say, I want everyone to know who's to the left of them and everyone to know who's to the right of them, as your procedure, the first thing you say, turn towards the left. Unfortunately, if you say turn towards the left, everyone turns that way and no one can see anyone else. But you have to decide how you're going to do this. Turn people to face each other like that. So the clearer, the point being, the clearer you know exactly what you want to accomplish, it helps so much. It helps so much. Then, when you have your objectives, say if you have three or four objectives to accomplish, or two objectives, or one objective to accomplish, then you have to make sure that the time that you have allotted is suitable for what you're trying to accomplish. And this often happens, and I'm going to run into this again and again, I think, in this class, that I will try to put in too much material in one class. So there'll be one sequence which is 10 minutes and another sequence which is 10 minutes and another sequence as steps towards my goal is 20 minutes, and it will add up to 80 minutes, and I have exactly 80 minutes in the class, for instance. And then one little thing happens, or one person distributes a little extra maprasadam, or there's a good question, or it's very funny, and then suddenly we're 10 minutes over time, or I have to cut out something. So when you decide how you're going to get there, or what you're trying to accomplish, and you know some of the different steps, you have to allot enough time for them. This probably will come up again and again. The procedures to get there have to be logical. They must make sense. They must connect to each other. And there are many different varieties of methods that can be used to accomplish the objectives. One that we've used in this class is lecturing. We've used demonstrations. We've done group work, the groups getting together. We've had practices by the different students. There's different silent readings that we may have. We've had some discussion. There's so many different, practically speaking, there's unlimited different procedures or different methods that one can use to accomplish an objective, although specific objectives may lean or push towards one or another procedure. But actually, there are many procedures that can be used. It's important in Kali Yuga to use some variety. Now, this class, for instance, is the longest of all the classes. It's an hour and a half. And if I was going to lecture for the entire 1 hour and a half, it would not work. And especially if I did it day after day, it would be very difficult, because in Kali Yuga, although lecturing is so important and so powerful, it's very hard for people to concentrate for a long period of time. It's actually hard for people to concentrate for a short period of time even. But lecturing, powerful and necessary as it is, as one of the procedures, is not possible, practically speaking, to use all the time in Kali Yuga. Manda samanda matayo manda bhagyu upadrutaha. That everyone in Kali Yuga is disturbed. This is the prime symptom of Kali Yuga personalities. Their minds are always disturbed. That means that unless I talk very loudly, and move around and write on the board and put in variety, then what happens naturally is people start listening to the kirtan or the birds, and they become prominent, or start thinking about all the homework you have, or how hard it is to sit on the floor for an hour and a half straight, or the mind thinks about this, or what it's like at home, and I wish I could eat some pizza in the restaurant, or this or that. The mind will just naturally wander. So therefore, use variety. We put in one quote where Prabhupada explains very clearly, or he says, that variety is the spice of life. In the Vedic times, the young students had minds that were so peaceful that they could sit and just listen and absorb and hear and learn just from hearing the teacher's words, just by sound vibration. There was no need of books even. This was because of the peacefulness of the individuals and the entire atmosphere. But in Kali Yuga, it is not the case at all. The atmosphere is disturbed and all the people are disturbed. So therefore, one of the main procedures that we will talk about and use in this class is the lecture. But don't overuse the lecture, or try to think in terms of doing other things as well in your teaching. There are other ways to teach. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Prabhupada, all the great acharyas use so many different methods of teaching, procedures. So, the point is, the main point is that what you are trying to do is achieve your objective. Always keep that in mind. Don't think in terms of I'm doing everything right, but the students have not learned what I was teaching. That is failure on the teacher's part. Teachers who are successful do what is working. They make sure, somehow or another, due to their desire, they make sure that their students are learning what they are teaching. So they use procedures that work. And they're always evaluating how their teaching is doing to make sure that their procedures are working, that the students are learning what they are teaching. That's the real purpose of evaluation. In this course, we're going to go over, some of the methods will be quite briefly discussed, but you can read about them. They're quite interesting. We're going to be using some of them, more than talking about them. But we're going to be discussing four different methods or types of procedures to achieve instructional objectives. The first one is, as we said, the lecture, and we'll talk about that today. The second one is using discussion. Discussion is very powerful and is very good. It is very difficult to do in a big group. 25 is much too big to have a discussion. A good discussion, what to speak of 50. 15 is borderline too big. 8 is just about the right number to have a discussion. 5 to 8. So therefore, when we broke into small groups, I saw that everyone was very encouraged, enthusiastic, was learning. Discussion is very useful. We're going to be dealing with discussion and spending a few days on that later on. Another one is role-playing. Something that we'll see how much we use it, but we're using it to some degree when we're having students come and teach, because in this class they are taking the role, although they are students, they are taking the role of a teacher. It is a very effective method, role-playing, for teaching. Although I'm not sure exactly how much time we will spend it with in particular, and also activities, learning activities. Learning activities. These four different procedures will be used. Prabhupada used all of these, I'm convinced, although I'm not sure how much he was thinking of them as learning activities. For instance, a Gurukula student, he hears lectures on humility and tolerance. And his teacher is setting the example of humility and tolerance. And then, as an activity to help him learn humility and tolerance, he'll be sent out begging. So he says, "My dear sir, could you please give some rice, some food, some something, some paisa?" "No, go away." "What? I'm asking." "Oops. I just heard about humility and tolerance. Now I will demonstrate it." But activities, practice, can teach us so much. So these can actually be built into the learning experience. Now, these four will be discussed tomorrow. Please read up to page 20. Up to page 33, which will talk about on learning activities, role playing, and we'll be dealing with discussion a little later. Today, I would like to speak something about lecturing. Now, we're all experienced in lecturing. All devotees in Krishna consciousness pretty much right from the very beginning get chances to give classes or preaching opportunities and lecture. Lecturing sometimes is said to be very old-fashioned because it is said that anything that can be spoken in a lecture can be read in a book. So why take the time to hear the lecture? Just read it in the book. Often, especially in universities, the lecture method is criticized. But in any case, whether people like it or don't like it, it is always used. Everyone is forced to use the lecture. It has its drawbacks, as we said in Kali Yuga, because it's very difficult for people to concentrate for long periods of time during a lecture. I think everyone who either sits in a Bhagavatam class or gives a Bhagavatam class notices this every once in a while, that that no one is listening or everyone's asleep or something like that. It is difficult. Lecturing has its drawbacks, although it is necessary and has its strengths. But it is necessary, but it has its drawbacks. One way to overcome some of the difficulties in lecturing is to interdisperse the lecture with other things, such as a demonstration, such as questions, such as discussion, like that. One shouldn't lecture in a class, as a general rule, for more than 10 or 15 minutes without a break of some other activity. Why? Always disturbed. Very difficult. So therefore, some break put in, and I think I should put one in right now somehow or another. Should be good. Otherwise, people's minds go or have gone. Okay, any questions up to this point? Yeah. Well, it depends what you wanted to teach them, right? So we were talking about procedures, not objectives at that time. Right? What we're talking about now is different procedures or ways to accomplish the objective. To what? Oh. See, but we're not really talking about begging now and the benefits of begging, although we can comment on it. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about activities, engaging in activities that will help us learn specific things, using those activities as a procedure to learn. That's what we're actually talking about. It's not. It's an actual example, but I didn't want to discuss the example. It was an example of a principle or a technique, a procedure, right? But it is advisable for someone who wants to learn humility to do things like that. But again, it's the teacher who has to know his student's capacity and what will be helpful and what will hinder. Another part of that process of sending a student out begging is that when he comes back, the teacher will talk to him and counsel him and see how he did and see what tests he passed and what tests he failed when he was out there, and give him advice and then maybe send him out again. Tell him how to, you know, hear from him and counsel. So the instructional process to learn humility is not an instructional objective at all. It is a very long-range educational objective that isn't accomplished in one day or in one week or one year. It's a lifetime's work. Activities are very helpful, as is lecturing, in that we have to hear about it. Discussion about it, as maybe we're, this is a combination lecture and discussion here, but discussion. Because obviously you have some points that you would probably, if we were sitting alone, you'd probably like to make about the merits or demerits about such activities. So that would take some discussion, and from that there would be some learning taking place. Good question. Okay, any other questions on these points? Yeah, Jayhata?
How would you break a lecture, let's say on a Bhagavatam class? You say you give a lecture for more than 10-15 minutes. How would you break a lecture?
In a Bhagavatam class, you can't... You see, there's a very established procedure in a Bhagavatam class that we really can't go out of. But you should know that every once in a while you have to tell a story. When Yadu told the story, you know, all our ears pointed and picked up. We all laughed, we all clapped. When we got some prasadam, we're all happy. When there's something written on the board even, that breaks up. In a Bhagavatam class, you have to break up your points that you're going to make with story, with this, with that. Put in variety, even though you can't have everyone doing an activity, go out and beg for 10 minutes and come back during the Bhagavatam class. But you have to break the pace of your presentation down. And you'll see that all good speakers do this, just naturally or consciously.
You said something about how you thought that everyone had given lectures without verifying that. Is it one of your objectives to teach the students or inspire them to, after the course, arrange ways they can use this?
I hadn't quite thought of it like that, but if people are inspired to preach, it naturally happens. And also the people who wish to learn how to teach and preach, they're the ones who come. How many of you, raise your hand if you at least occasionally preach to someone or give a lecture, an actual lecture? Raise your hand if you at least occasionally do that. So that's quite a percentage.
I thought I had was just that if you know you're going to use what you learned, and while you're learning, if they say you're going to go out and listen to you 10 minutes, and this voice is going to tell you some things before you go out, whether you're going to listen or
So relevance, personal relevance is important. Now, I'm going to go back to lecturing now because we had our break and we only have a few seconds left. Anyway, there's always tomorrow. There were 6 points we put down here that can help one's lecture. We'll have a lesson on teacher liveliness, which are very simple techniques that can help all types of presentations. We'll deal with that in a few days. But here are some simple pointers, starting on page 23. The second one was something, what's your name, Prabhu? I'm sorry, I don't know your name. Yeah. Bhakti Dave. Now, Bhakti Dave made this point over here. The second one, in your presentation, take into account the mentality, present understandings, and interests of your students. You have to know who you're talking to, your audience, and you have to speak in such a way that they will be able to understand you. You have to know who your audience is. It's a similar point is made in writing also, that you must know your audience. A second point, enthusiasm. Don't expect enthusiasm from your class. This is the third point on 24. Don't expect enthusiasm from your class about your subject matter unless you possess enthusiasm yourself. Students learn more when their teacher is enthusiastic. So how to become enthusiastic about your subject matter that you're going to be speaking about or lecturing about. My hint on this is that you have to find your own angle on what you're studying and going to speak about. Something that personally inspires you. Just like there is a lecture today about on the Bhagavatam verse by Giriraj Maharaj, and he spoke very much about how the senses become enlivened individually and then collectively in prema bhakti. So that point enlivened him, and because it enlivened him, he was able to speak with great enthusiasm about it. Now, if a different person, and tomorrow Krishnaraj is going to be giving Bhagavatam class on that very same verse, he will find undoubtedly a whole different angle on that same verse and purport, and he will speak enthusiastically about it from a whole different point of view because he's found something that enlivens him. And then actually speaking, that verse was so full of transcendental depth and meaning that probably for the next 2 weeks we could have 12 different speakers or 14 different speakers speak about that one verse in purport, which wasn't very long, and each of them would cover completely different information and be enthusiastic about it. And each of them would be able to, would be speaking from their own point of view, their own angle. And it would be unique, and it's necessary to see the material freshly from your own point of view if you want to be enthusiastic. So how to see something from your own point of view? Go deeply, just like gold at the bottom of the sea must be caught by the determined fisherman. You have to become determined to see, to get some realization, some deep realization. And if you look deeply,